could never allow myself to depend on social media for acceptance.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello, and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd, and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter, as always, at redrock_bball. Wasn't planning on doing a second show today. Myself and Kyle McEwen recorded two shows yesterday. We talked about the Kawhi Leonard deal, then a whole bunch of other stuff, and then overnight there was a trade in the NBA. So what I'm going to do now, just a quick podcast today on the Carmelo Anthony Dennis Schroeder trade. So
let's get to it.
All right, we might as well get stuck into it. Although, actually, before we do, for those of you who have put your name down for a head-to-head league in the Red Rock Challenge, the Red Rock Challenge leagues are all full. I am doing a Tier 2 for those leagues. The Tier 2 will be no prize money in those leagues, but it is a $10 entry fee. All of that money will be donated to the Fantasy Cares charity. You can go check out fantasycares.net, started by Scott Fish. So $10 entry into that donation that goes towards Fantasy Cares. And you get into the Tier 2 of the Red Rock Challenge head-to-head leagues. If you win that league, you'll be guaranteed a slot in the Red Rock Challenge next season in the main pool of the event. And then if you win those, you can move into the Champions League, the creme de la creme of the leagues that I run. So I've sent out emails for the first three of the Tier 2 leagues. They filled up immediately. I'm going to send out another email today, probably with another six Tier 2 leagues on there. I expect those to fill relatively quickly as well. So stay tuned for those emails. If you have put your application in to be a part of the Red Rock Leagues, there are still a few positions available in the Roto Leagues and the points leagues as well. I'll send out more emails with those, but looking to fill out these Tier 2 head-to-head leagues at this point. Again, let's get talking about this trade that went down. Quite a few moving pieces in this deal, with Oklahoma City, with Atlanta, and with Philadelphia as well. Let's look at the main portion of the deal. Let's look at the entirety of the deal, actually. Carmelo Anthony gets traded from the Oklahoma City Thunder. He moves on to the Atlanta Hawks, where he will be waived, so you don't need to worry about Melo having an impact on guys like the artist formerly known as Taurean Prince, on The Baptist, on Trae Young, on The Undertaker, Dwayne Dedman, on perhaps Jeremy Lin there as well. So Melo is gone from Atlanta. He will likely sign with Houston. That means they're probably going to have to put him and PJ Tucker at the 3 and the 4. Hopefully it's Melo at the 4. PJ can play the 3. I'm not loving how Melo's going to go. I don't think that Carmelo Anthony in Houston is going to be really too much different from Carmelo Anthony in Oklahoma City. But in saying that, Chris Paul and James Harden are significantly better passers than Paul George and Russell Westbrook, so maybe Melo finds himself in a better spot. He also was able to play quite well under Mike D'Antoni before. If those shots start falling down, maybe he can have some value, but he is going to be a late pick, but someone that I wouldn't hate taking at pick 120 or pick 130. Some people will go earlier, they'll go 50, 60 for him, and that's nonsense, and I want nothing to do with that, but it appears that Melo is headed to Houston. We don't have full confirmation of that at this point, but I imagine he starts and plays about 30 minutes. There's also rumors that Houston's looking to get out of Ryan Anderson. Not that I think Anderson will be playing a huge amount this season, but that's something that's on the board for the Rockets as well as they look to bring in Carmelo Anthony. Dennis Schroeder moves across to Oklahoma City. Actually, let's back on OKC for a second. And actually, no, let's do the rest of the trade. Dennis Schroeder moves to the Oklahoma City Thunder. The Thunder send a lottery-protected first-round pick to the Atlanta Hawks, which then converts into 2 seconds in 2020. They will make the playoffs almost undoubtedly, the Thunder, so that means the Hawks will get a pick maybe in the 20s for their trouble here. Also, Philadelphia got involved in the trade. They acquired Mike Muscala off the Atlanta Hawks, and in the process of doing that, they had to send Timotei Luwawu-Cabarrot to the Oklahoma City Thunder and Justin Anderson to the Atlanta Hawks. I'm not sure how to feel about that Philadelphia portion of things. I stress time and time again that wings are super important in the NBA, and yeah, TLC and Anderson weren't likely to be part of the rotation on an every night basis, but having these wings there, and I like Anderson, and I like Luau Cabarrú to a degree as well, though he did regress significantly. But Muscala comes in as a guy replacing Bielitsa, who was projected to sign with the Sixers and then moved over we don't know if he's going to the Kings or if he's going to Europe. So Muscala's an underrated player, a guy that can protect the rim, that can hit threes. The problem is his best position is probably center. You've got Joel Embiid, Rashawn Holmes, and Amir Johnson there. I think Holmes is done. I think he's going to be out here in Philadelphia. I think they could either look to trade him or he is non-guaranteed. He could be waived. Jonah Bolden is coming across as well, so he can move in as that backup power forward spot with Ersan Ilyasova. But Muscala's going to play. I think he's better than Anderson. I think he's better than Luau Cabarrú. It is at quite a crowded front court with Embiid and Šarić and Bolden and Johnson and Holmes there. But again, I think someone is going to move on there from a Philadelphia point of view. We'll talk about the impact of TLC and Anderson a little bit later on. But we talked about Melo and what this could potentially mean for his fantasy value. As for Schroeder, well, we know this is a disaster for his fantasy value. Now, he's someone that we talked about as maybe not a great NBA player, but someone that could put up fantasy stats. He was the 63rd ranked player last season, the 59th ranked player the year before that. In 2015-16, he was the backup to Jeff Teague.
My name is Jeff.
And he played 20 minutes a game, and he was 159th. Obviously, Russell Westbrook is the point guard in Oklahoma City. Andre Robertson is the shooting guard. There's Terrence Ferguson. There's now Luau Cabarrú. There's Alex Abrines there. But I think we will see a little bit of Schroeder-Westbrook backcourt pairings. And I think Dennis might play 21 or 22 minutes per night in that zone. I think he probably won't play the flat 20 he played in Atlanta, maybe an extra couple of minutes there. But it's not going to be enough for him to have fantasy value for any sort of standard type formats. His value is going to dip pretty considerably. And in that season, he averaged 11, 2.5, and 4.5. Now, those assist numbers can still be valuable, and he still might be able to get those, but we haven't really seen anyone be able to thrive in any sort of backup role behind Russell Westbrook before. But to be honest, the guys they had there were Ray Felton, who was okay, backwards James, Samaje Christen, who was terrible. So it does give them someone who they can pair with Westbrook, someone who they can use and maybe drop Westbrook's minutes a little bit. He's not a great player, Schroeder, but he is significantly better than anything they've had in the past on this team as a backup behind Westbrook. His dynasty value is in real trouble here, Schroeder. He's still got 3 more years left at $15 million a season. I'm not really sure that that there's anywhere he's going to go to become a starter from now on. I wouldn't be expecting a return to top 60, top 50, or probably even top 100 numbers for Schroeder at any point in the next couple of seasons. A Westbrook injury could change that, of course. But if things remain as they are, I just don't see people really looking into Schroeder, who I think there's a significant chunk of him that is a shit bloke. I think that's a large portion of why he wanted to leave Atlanta. They were very happy to get rid of him. I think I believe he's got some pending assault charges. I'm not sure of the details on those. There's some definite shit-blokeness about Schroeder. I don't see him ever really returning to a top 100 fantasy player, so bear that in mind when you're looking at him for dynasty purposes. Now, for the Thunder, this saves them money. It doesn't save them as much money as you would think. Melo was on $27 million. Schroeder's on $15.5 million. So it's a $12 million saving. You've got to factor in Timotei Luau-Cabarrú salary, which isn't much. It's about $1 million, $2 million around that mark. But it does save them, I think, about $50 million in total salary and tax savings, which is still a pretty decent amount. And they were able to make their team probably even if not marginally stronger. Melo was a significant downgrade for them last season. When he was on the court, he sucked. And Schroeder gives them that backup guard that they've been looking for with some offensive punch off the bench, a role that Melo wasn't ready to take on in any sort of sense. Now, what else does it do for Oklahoma City? Well, they need a new starting power forward. We thought perhaps before the Melo trade last season that Patrick Patterson would get that role. He was absolute garbage for most of last season, and I think that knee injury is going to be something that really does bother him the rest of his career. This opens it up for Jeremy Grant, who they just re-signed to that three-year, $27 million contract as a restricted free agent. And I think that Grant, and he showed this in the playoffs, is able to play some decent minutes and be a useful player. Is he a great fantasy guy? No. Can he be? He's had flashes in the past of being able to put up decent type production, mainly for his ability to block shots. Can he become any sort of a decent level shooter? That's the concern. He played 20 minutes per game last season, and he was ranked 242nd, averaging 8 points, 4 boards, with a block on 54, 68, and 29% from 3. Only hit half a 3. Yeah, this is, I guess, the concern with what he is able to do. Can he get that efficiency up? And over the last 14 games of last season, he was a 61% shooter. Over the last 26, he was a 59% shooter, including 38% from 3. So really struggled early on from 3, but got it going in the second half of the year. The blocks is where his value is going to come. That high field goal percentage, which he bumped up a lot last season. But we do have to remember his first 4 years, 35%, 42%, and 46% from the field, took it to 54 last year, and again, post All-Stars at 59%. So there's a definite trend there. Whether it sticks at 54% remains to be seen, but possibly he goes into even a smaller usage role, 16% last year, playing alongside Westbrook and Paul George might shrink that somewhat. But it is going to have some interest. I don't think his upside is all that high. Per 36 last season, Grant averaged 15-7 with 1.7 blocks. So there's something there, 0.7 threes. There is a little bit of value there, but out of all players, that ranked 320th in per 36 fantasy value. So it's not excellent, but there is still something there. And again, post All-Star, 18-7 with 2 blocks per 36. Not too bad. He'd be someone I'd be interested in having a look at a flyer on if my free throw percentage can handle it. And I need those blocks. He's not going to become this great assist guy or steals guy or have a huge volume of shots or scoring or anything along those lines because of the other players around him. Now, with Westbrook and Paul George, with Melo gone, there are definitely shots to be absorbed by these guys. Will Westbrook push up to that 40% usage he had in that first season post Kevin Durant? Yeah, I'm not sure about that, but Melo did have a 23% usage last season. Grant's not going to absorb 23% usage. Does Steven Adams get some more shots? I think probably. Schroeder's going to take some of those shots, obviously, and Westbrook and George. So I can see Russ and PG getting a slight bump here. Nothing major, but a few extra shots their way. But of course, Westbrook getting a few extra shots means that he becomes more of a negative impact in field goal percentage. But you should be looking at punting field goal percentage if you own Russell Westbrook anyway. So there will be a slight uptick for those guys just in their shot attempts, potential scoring numbers, with Jeremy Grant being an interesting flyer as well. And as I said, I think Carmelo Anthony could be a late round flyer if he ends up in Houston. So they're the two biggest parts of this trade, is Melo going to Atlanta, getting waived, and Schroeder going to OKC, and how that changes things with the Thunder. Of course, with the Thunder, Timotei Luwawu-Cabarro comes across there. He can play the 2 and the 3. There is a few guys there. Schroeder's going to play some minutes at the 2. There is a Brines, there is Ferguson, there is Robinson. There's Paul George at the 3 there. Also, Kyle Singler, who I imagine will get stretched and waived now, he'll be gone. So Luwawu-Cabarro could, I think, will probably see more minutes in Oklahoma City than he would in Philadelphia. I think the minutes would have been harder to come by. He could be easily ahead of Abrines. He might not be, but he could be ahead of Abrines. He should be ahead of Ferguson. But it's not going to be a huge amount. And we saw in Luwawu-Cabarro's rookie season that he was able to put up pretty good numbers in that stretch that he was playing. And his last 6 games of his rookie season, 7 games, he went 19-4, 23-3, 19-3-3, 18-3-3, 12-4-2, 24-5-3, and 14-2-3. Strong numbers. When he was the guy who was getting all the shot attempts he could, that was when him and Rashawn Holmes were going bananas. He's never going to get back to that level. I don't believe that was probably the strongest run of his career. I did like Luwawu-Cabarro. I like his ability to create a little bit on the wing, but he regressed pretty significantly last season, and he's not going to be too much of an impact guy on this Thunder team. The other portions of this, Justin Anderson, a guy who I did really like in Dallas. He showed flashes last season in Philadelphia, but only played in 38 games and 14 minutes, averaged 6 points. He's a guy that can be a triple one type of player. Hit 2.4 threes per 36 with a steal and half a block, but prior in his rookie year in Dallas, was at 1.4 blocks per 36 minutes. Him heading to Atlanta, who are likely going to start Trae Young or Jeremy Lin, or a combination of those two in the backcourt, and Kent Bazemore. So two of those three will be the starting 1 and 2, I would imagine. The artist formerly known as Taurean Prince, the Baptist John Collins, and the Undertaker Dwayne Dedman. So, what does this mean for Anderson and Atlanta? Is Justin Anderson ahead of DeAndre Bembry? Is he ahead of Tyler Dorsey? I'd have to think yes. I think he's better than both of those guys. I still like Bembry, but he could move into a role where he plays more than 38 games and more than 14 minutes. I wouldn't be shocked to see 20 minutes a night out of Justin Anderson. And that could push him to the top 250. And that's not going to be an impact for most people, but 30-team leagues, 20-team leagues, an injury to Taurean Prince occurs, and we could see something with Justin Anderson. Remember, Lloyd Pierce is also familiar with Justin Anderson from their time in Philadelphia. Anderson showed some flashes last season. I think that he will be a guy that's going to have more value than, say, Luau Cabarrot in OKC and have an opportunity to do some things there in Atlanta. Mike Muscala going to Philadelphia means that there is one less player in that front court. Last season, we had to deal with Ersan Ilyasova. We had to deal with Mike Muscala. Now, it's the Baptist. It's the Undertaker. That's it. Let's go. John Collins, I would be stunned if he is not a top 50 player. I think that John Collins has the ability now to be maybe even a top 30 guy. That might be just getting a little bit too turgid here on the Baptist, but he's going to be massive. And I don't know what his ADP is going to be. I don't know what other people are going to be thinking. He is massive. He is a legitimate chance for 20 and 10, 1.5 blocks, 0.5 threes, 55 and 75% percentages, which is top 50. He is going to get more minutes, way more minutes, much bigger usage. He's shown steps forward. He is going to be an absolute beast, I think, this season for this team. Trae Young is going to get his usage, no doubt about that. Taurean Prince is going to take a step up. He could see himself as almost a lock top 75 guy, but you have to remember formerly that in that stretch last season at the end of the year when he was killing it, there was no point guard on this team. So his assist number, 6-7 per game, they're not going to be able to continue with both Trae Young and Jeremy Lin on this team. So don't expect that level of play from the artist formerly known as Taurean Prince, but I would expect him to be a solid top 75 guy and the Baptist to be a top 50 guy. I think this move helps Trae Young be a solid top 100 guy, especially if you're punting field goals. And depending on the health of Jeremy Lin, he could very easily be a top 100 guy as well, depending on what they want to do, whether they want to play him alongside Trae Young there also. It also opens up some minutes for the Wizard, Amari Spellman, in deeper leagues. I thought he'd find it hard to get enough playing time on this team to be useful with Muscala, Dedmon, and the Baptist there. But of course, with Muscala now gone, there is an opportunity. Now, Spellman showed a little bit in Summer League. I'm still not overly impressed with him as an NBA starter caliber big man. He did enough defensively at times. He showed he could rack up some defensive numbers. But I'm not sure we need to get overly excited about what he's going to do. There is still Miles Plumlee there, so maybe we look at the Wizard as a fourth big on this team behind Dedmon and Collins. But there is obviously, he is going to be a rotational player almost immediately for the Atlanta Hawks. Justin Anderson, a guy I didn't mention was with Kevin Huerter, who we didn't see in Summer League with a wrist injury. I'm not sure he's going to be ahead of Justin Anderson, but I think Anderson's going to be a rotation guy. Now, in the Philadelphia side of things, again, they lose two wings. They're going to be hoping Markelle Fultz is ready for a 25, 28-minute role. JJ Redick playing a little bit more of the three. Jared Bayless I wouldn't be counting on. But what it means is without Luau Cabarrot and Anderson, the DRC, Zaire Smith, Furkan Korkmaz, they have to step into those roles now. Maybe it's Shake Milton. Maybe it's Landry Shamet. Shamet can play a little bit off the ball as well. Wilson Chandler's got a pretty significant role there in Philadelphia as a backup three and backup four now. So I think they're pretty okay. Like, you look at their starting lineup of Simmons, Redick, Covington, Šarić, Embiid. And then you've got Wilson Chandler coming off the bench as the sixth man. Markelle Fultz is the sixth or seventh man. Muscala as the eighth man. And then you get who's coming in as the next guy. TJ McConnell as the ninth man. And then you got Amir Johnson in that mix. You've got DRC there. So they're fine. So it's not going to make Smith a real valuable player. Muscala's going to have his moments. Now, his time last season, amazingly, he was a top 190 guy in only 20 minutes. 7.5 points, over a three, half a block, half a steal, 92% from the free throw line, which is a staggering 16 percentage point leap from the year before. Will he be able to get 20 minutes in Philadelphia? I'm not convinced about that. Embiid's going to be getting 32-33 at center, so there's 15 minutes there. Amir, Rashawn, they're going to be playing there. I think you'll see a little bit more Simmons at power forward as well, Wilson Chandler at power forward. So I'm not sure Muscala gets many more minutes than this, and he's not going to be anywhere near a standard league guy, but I think he can contribute. Maybe he gets 17 a night and can be an interesting blocks threes streaming sort of a player. So I'm not 100% sure how I feel about this deal, but the Sixers must have some faith in DRC, in Furkan Korkmaz, in Markelle Fultz, in Wilson Chandler to be their backup 1, 2, 3, 4, and TJ McConnell in that mix as well. There's quite a few guys there. But Muscala is a valuable player. He's a stretch five. He can protect the rim to a degree as well. So there is something there for the Sixers, just giving up two wings and a guy who I think is a strong defender in Justin Anderson is a little bit curious, but there is guys to step into that role. Plenty of players, and Anderson and Luau Cabra wouldn't have been rotation players on a regular basis. This just accelerates the DRC role, Zaire Smith for the Philadelphia 76ers. So obviously quite a bit of stuff happening here. The overall take is a rise for Jeremy Grant, Paul George, Russell Westbrook, John Collins, Trey Young, Taurean Prince. They all get bumps in their fantasy value. Justin Anderson gets a bump. Melo, probably similar in Houston. Schroeder with the big downgrade. TLC, deeper leagues, a little bit more of a bump there. And Muscala, probably not going to see the 20 minutes per game that he saw in Atlanta last season, so a little bit of a loser. I think it probably makes the Thunder about the same as they were last year, maybe a little bit better. I think it helps the Philadelphia 76ers marginally. The Hawks, it doesn't really. Actually, it probably helps the Hawks because it makes them worse by basically getting Justin Anderson for Dennis Schroeder, but it opens up minutes for Lin and Young and for more development for some of those younger guys. So you'd have to think that it's probably a win-win-win for everybody. Hard to see anybody as a massive loser in this trade, but definitely some machinations happening there. One last thing I want to talk about quickly about the Kawhi Leonard DeMar DeRozan deal from yesterday. I think the Raptors won the trade. Getting Kawhi Leonard significantly raises their ceiling. It doesn't mean that I think that the Spurs were bad. I think that the Spurs would struggle to get a better deal than that. So me saying that I think the Raptors won the deal doesn't mean I think the Spurs did a shit job. I don't know how they could have done too much better than that. But their team is a weird team. DeRozan and Aldridge combination, I'm not sure how that's going to work. I've said this quite a few times on this podcast, is that the Spurs mystique, oh, they're the Spurs, best front office, all this sort of stuff. There's still some curious decisions, paying that much to Pau Gasol, Marco Bellinelli coming in and getting that contract there. Just the roster looks weird. I like Poeltl, but I don't know. I don't think we should be Lonnie Walker. I'm not sold on him. Yeah, Derek, I don't know. I just don't see that we should be hailing every single move that they make. I think the Raptors won the trade, as much as you can give a winning grade a day after the deal, but I don't think the Spurs could have done much better. Just when you're in the position of trading away a top five NBA player, you're never going to win the deal. And DeMar DeRozan, people look at it, oh, it's a positive. We've got him locked in for 3 years. That all could also be bad, that you've got him locked in for 3 years at $27 million per year. That he might not be able to live up to that contract. He is 29. Maybe he starts losing athleticism. He doesn't get to the line as much. His defense doesn't come along. He regresses. He still can't hit the three. Maybe that's a bad thing that he's locked up for 3 more years at $27 million per season. That's a possibility as well. Don't want to harp too much more on that deal, but I just want to clarify my thoughts. I think the Raptors won the deal. I don't think the Spurs did bad. I don't think they could have done better, but they didn't win the deal. When you get the top five player, you win. And that's how I look at it from the Raptors' point of view. Guys, go and subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify, and on YouTube. Smash the subscribe button. Leave me a thumbs up. Follow me on Twitter and on Instagram at redrock_bball. Keep an eye out for those Red Rock Challenge Tier 2 League emails that will be going out today. Tell your friends, like it on Facebook. You know the drill. You know how to help the show. That'll be great if you could do it. Also, quickly, before I go, one last thing. Next week, Monday's show is going to be related to dynasty leagues, how to set up a new dynasty league, and answering questions you have about strategies for participating in a dynasty startup league, that sort of thing. So that's what we're going to be covering. Ways to do settings in starting your own dynasty league, and ideas and strategy ideas for people beginning in a dynasty league. So if you've got any questions, you know what to do. Tweet at me at redrock_bball, and I'll be back to talk about that next week. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Sheldon Mack.